You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls, but you're gonna have to serve somebody. Yes, indeed, you're gonna have to serve somebody. Well, it may be the devil or it may be the Lord, but you're gonna have to serve somebody.
All right, good morning. Get our groove on this morning with that, huh? Well, my name is Scott Heider, and I'm a church plant resident, and it's great to be here with you this morning. If you don't know what a church plant resident is, I'm figuring it out as well. I'm here to plant a church. I've teamed up with HCBC, and so I'm here for a year to gain wisdom and training as I go out into Austin and to do what the mission of this church is to reach every man, woman, and child with the life-changing reality of Jesus Christ. And so we're excited to be here. We're excited to be a part of the church. We're excited to be a part of what God has already been doing here in Austin. We got here in March. Now, I was born and raised in Southern California. Okay, cool. Those are the Californians. Okay, native Texans, go ahead, groan. I know. When we literally, like, we're pulling into town, we're, like, in Dripping Springs. I stopped at a bank, and so I'm doing my banking business, you know. And the gal, the teller was, she was really nice, and she saw my license, and she said, "So what are you doing in Texas?" I said, "Well, we're moving here." And she's like, "Oh, that's great." And then there was this guy that was next to me at another teller, and he was kind of like the stereotype. Like, if you live outside of Texas, there is a stereotype of what a Texan looks like. And he kind of fit that. I mean, he's wearing boots, which are cool, like I'm down with the boots. He was wearing some tight jeans, and they weren't like the skinny jeans that are cool now with students, you know. They were like painted on, no circulation, in his legs type Wranglers. He had the 10-gallon, and he had this belt buckle slash trash can lid slash shield. I mean, it was big. Like, if it was going to snow, he had a sled. I mean, he was ready to go, like, seriously. And he looked at his teller. Now, if you wear that by chance and you're not wearing that now, like, don't find me after the service. You know, I'm just saying, I'm just showing you what I saw. He looked at his teller, and he growled, and he kind of was like, "Oh, man, another California. This place is going to heaven," you know. And so I just couldn't help it, you know. I just said, "Well, you know, I'm here to keep Austin weird." And he's like, "Well, you'll do a good job of that." And I said, "That's right, because, you know, Austin's weird as California's normal." So we're excited to be here. And as I've got to know quite a few people, I've learned that there's a lot of people that are not from Texas. They're not native Texans that live here. In fact, just so I don't feel so alone, how many of you are not originally from Texas? Just go ahead and play around. Okay, so native Texans, look around. You're in a dire situation right here. You are. And if you haven't been officially told yet, a native Texan, because a lot of times they're so nice, if they haven't been told yet, I'm going to officially inform you that you and I, we're what's wrong with Texas. So if we would just get out, you know, everything would be good. But I'll get serious here in a moment, I promise. As we've been here, I found our family tree. My mom was going through a family tree and found out that kind of back in the day, my grandfather was actually born in San Antonio. And so really, I mean, he's just an exile Texan out in California, and I'm like third generation exile Texan coming back to the promised land. And, right? Yeah. I married a full-blooded Texan, so I did something right in my life, and so I think I can legally reside here. I've been married to Jamie for 10 years. She has about 75 more Facebook friends than I do. So just want to give you a measurable about how much more likable she is than I am. And we have three kids, Jackson, Avery, and Brody, and 9, 7, and 5, and a dog named Jake. And we're planting in South Austin, so this is kind of where the commercial begins. We're planting in South Austin, and we're planting kind of in the South Lamar, Zilker, Barton Springs area. And I know that you've heard it just a minute ago, and if you've been sitting here long enough, you've heard the mission of reaching every man, woman, and child. And if you've been sitting there, and God has kind of been tugging on your heart, saying, you know what, you need to join and to go along with someone who's on mission, I'd love to talk to you. If you live down there, you know someone who does, or it's time to move south, make sure that you connect with me at the Connection Center. after service, because that's what we'll do. We'll connect at the Connection Center, and I'd love to hear your story, and you get to hear about kind of what God is doing and what we're up to in South Austin. So that's the end of the commercial. So we're in Proverbs, and Pastor Tim has been taking us through the book of Proverbs. It's just an incredible book. It's so easy to pick up, to look just at one or two verses and get just kind of that everyday wisdom, you know, for that everyday wisdom for everyday life. And a lot of it you just say is just common sense. But since God coined it first, it's his sense, it's biblical sense, and it's just now has become common. And we're going to look today at our work ethic. Proverbs has a lot to say about how we work. Now, I know it's the weekend, but we're going to talk a little bit about work because God cares about how we work or when we don't work, what that looks like. And so we're going to look into Proverbs chapter 6, starting in verse 6. And if you have your Bibles, go ahead and take those out. If you don't, there are Bibles in and around the room that we'd love for you to go ahead and grab one. And if you don't have one, you can go ahead and take that one home. But we're in Proverbs chapter 6, verse 6. And we're going to get a little National Geographic because we're going to learn a little bit about ants. So there's this lazy person that's called a sluggard. And this word comes up a lot in Proverbs, the sluggard, the lazy person. And so he's given an illustration of an ant. An ant is a worker. And so picking up in verse 6, it says, "Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider its ways and be wise. It has no commander, no overseer or ruler, yet it stores its provisions in summer and gathers its food at harvest. How long will you lie there, you sluggard? When will you get up from your sleep? A little sleep, a little slumber, a little folding of the hands to rest, and poverty will come on you like a bandit and scarcity like an armed man." Now, we're all pretty familiar with ants. I mean, here in Texas, I mean, we got some big old ants, you know, ants that bite and leave their mark. But, I mean, ants are pretty common. In Palestine, they had harvester ants. And so they observed the seasons. They would go out during harvest time. They would gather its food, and they'd bring it back to its nest. Now, when you think of an ant, you never really think of an ant as being lazy. An ant is always moving. It's always going somewhere. Growing up, I think we lived literally on an anthill. It's like there's a hill, and our house was just plopped right on top of it. We had these little sugar ants. And if we would leave just a crumb, I mean, just like a quarter, just a little bit of a Fruit Loop on the ground, I mean, in a half hour, our kitchen would just be flooded with ants. I mean, I feel so bad for my mom because literally they'd be everywhere within the house, no matter how clean we kept the house. I mean, ants, they're diligent. They know what they need to do, and they work hard, and they're self-disciplined. Now, there's a couple of things to know about ants that relate to being a worker, maybe something you didn't know about an ant. The first is that an ant, it doesn't have a leader. Now, when you see ants, you know, they're in lines. It seems like there's some organization going on. You know, they know where they're going, but there's no leader within kind of the ant colony that's saying, "Okay, listen, ants, we all need to go out over here, go scavenge over here. Now it's time, you know, we found some food. Let's get in a single file line. You know, let's go get the food. Let's bring it back to the nest." There is no leader. In fact, the writer gives a couple of different titles to signify that an ant is independent of any type of central leadership. And so he mentions the commander. You know, commander is kind of an administrator. It's an administrator over a particular area. An ant does not have a commander, does not have an overseer, someone that handles any type of questions or issues or problems. There isn't an overseer for an ant. Neither is there a ruler. I mean, someone who is ultimately in charge or governs. An ant just goes and does what an ant does because it's self-directed. It's self-disciplined. It knows that it needs to eat. And it observes, especially this harvester ant, it observes the seasons. And so there are specific times in this ant's life where it needs to work, and it needs to work hard. There's proper times in which they need to take responsibility if they want to eat throughout the summer when there isn't food to be eaten. Now, this is an example of a worker. See, someone who works hard, and I imagine that a lot of you in here, you work hard, is that you're self-disciplined and you're diligent. And you know the responsibilities that you have, and so you take responsibilities for those things, and you go and you work hard to attain them. There isn't anyone breathing down your neck and telling you, like, okay, so you got to get up. Okay, you got to do this, you got to do that. Just like the ant, the sluggard has been shown kind of this illustration to say, hey, lazy person, look at the ant. It doesn't need a leader. It's self-disciplined and self-directed. Because in the text, it says a couple of things that are very opposite of what is said about the ant. Because questions are given to the sluggard. It's like, how long? When? Like, when are you going to get up from your sleep? Like, are you going to continue to lie there? And we might have gone through seasons or mornings kind of like that when someone's like, dude, like, how long more are you going to sleep? Are you going to sleep any longer? Like, just give me 15 more minutes. You know, I just need 15 more minutes. I'm just going to lie there. Oh, you know what? I'll get to that tomorrow. Yeah, I know it's important, but, you know, I got it covered. You know, I still have some time. I'm going to push that back. And so the question of when and how long, because a sluggard is lazy. And the result of that is poverty. I mean, there are at least 14 verses that speak of idleness or laziness, whether implicitly or explicitly, and the result is poverty. Now, poverty can come on us kind of stealthily, unexpected. But for the sluggard, it also comes on them forcefully because they don't create opportunities to provide for themselves. And so they force it upon themselves because they're too lazy to go out and work. And so we're starting to kind of build up this understanding of what Proverbs has to say about a worker, the results that come from working, as well as those who are lazy, those who are a sluggard. And, you know, as I was looking over this, there are countless verses. I mean, I was kind of inundated. It's kind of like, wow, God, you care a lot. You care a lot about how we work, what our work life looks like. In fact, I mean, I didn't quite know where to stop with some of these verses, so I thought, you know, I'm just going to give kind of just a top 10 list of these verses of what it has to say about the worker so that we can identify the worker in our lives. We can identify whether we're truly working or not. And in the same time, in the process, we'll identify the lazy person. We'll identify the sluggard. So we're going to go through these kind of quick top 10 lists, so hang with me here. So the first is we can identify a worker as someone who is diligent and self-disciplined. And we already learned that from the ant. It's someone who's diligent and self-disciplined. So no prodding, no pressure. They just know what needs to be done. They're self-disciplined. They get themselves up in the morning. They don't need to be told what to do. They know what needs to get done, and they go and do it. There's no cheerleader. You know, there's no encourager. There's no one trying to stand there and say, try to motivate them to work, you know, or just say, hey, you know, I know this is tough, but I know you can do. They don't need an encourager. They just know that they need to work and they need to get the job done. Secondly, a worker is someone who is financially secure. Is someone who is financially secure. And in Proverbs chapter 10, verse 4, it says this, lazy hands make a man poor, but diligent hands bring wealth. Now, the worker can create the opportunity for them to make money. They can create the opportunity for them to be financially stable. That's not to say that there are workers that are not financially stable, and there's other variables that come into our life. But when we're lazy, we don't create those opportunities. When we're lazy, there isn't an opportunity for us to make any type of money. And so the result of that is financial instability. Now, kind of just a side note here, Proverbs also talks a lot about those who are poor and for us not to have any type of judgment. Because for some people who work hard and they've been able to put themselves in a position of being financially secure, I mean, sometimes it's really easy to look on those that are poor and kind of just cast judgment and just say, they just must be lazy. And that's not necessarily true because Proverbs also talks about oppression and people that have unfair things in life happen to them. So it's not always the case that if we work hard, we're going to be financially stable, but we will create opportunities for that to happen. The lazy person doesn't create those type of opportunities. Number three, a worker is someone who's identified as someone who sets priorities. It's someone who sets priorities. Proverbs 24:27 says, finish your outdoor work and get your fields ready, and after that, build your house. There's kind of this list of importance for the worker. First things first, it's important to do the most important things first, and a worker understands that. See, someone who's lazy, they often procrastinate. You know, the thing that's going to take the most effort, whether mentally or physically, it's like, well, I'm just going to wait. You know, that's just going to take a lot of me. I'm just going to push that off. And that's what we call procrastination. That's what a sluggard does. They procrastinate. Now, in college, I could have added a third category to this. We have the worker, we have the slacker, and then there's the hardworking slacker. And that was me. I mean, a hardworking slacker is someone who works really hard at not holding, you know, doing the responsibilities, not doing the things they need to do. I mean, and I was good at procrastinating. I mean, a lot of people say, oh, yeah, I procrastinated. I was good at that. I mean, I was really good. Like, I shouldn't have any pride in that, but I used to wait. I used to wait, like, there'd be a paper due, and I would say, like, like, how long can I wait in order to get the paper done before the deadline? And so I kind of did this through school, like to a point that I woke up at 8 o'clock and I had a 30-page paper due at 5 o'clock that day. Now, you probably go, like, what kind of grade did you get? Well, I mean, I got an A, but just kidding. I didn't. But I would continually push stuff off. You know, friends would be going out, and, you know, I'd have an exam at 8 a.m., you know, and of course, your friends never have an exam the same morning that you do, and they're always going to go do, like, the coolest thing that you wish you were going to go do. And so I would, you know, I'd rationalize. I go, okay, if I wait, you know, I can get in at 3, 4 in the morning, maybe. Okay, and that gives me, like, 3 hours before the test. That's plenty of time. I wasn't going to study that much anyways. And so a lazy person procrastinates, and they don't set priorities because, like, why was I there? I was there to get an education. That's right. I was there actually to learn. But somewhere along the line, my priorities got messed up. A worker, they set priorities. A worker also is someone who experiences power and freedom. It's someone who experiences, number four, power and freedom. Proverbs 12:24 says, "Diligent hands will rule, but laziness ends in slave labor." You see, leadership is given to those that are diligent. It's not given to those that are lazy. I mean, granted, there are times that people get put into a position, and that position comes with, you know, some type of authority, but true leadership is earned. I mean, true leadership, you know, people respect and want to follow somebody. If you're lazy, no one wants to follow a lazy person down a dead-end road. And so when you're put in a position of leadership, you have an opportunity to experience, you know, that power and freedom that comes from that leadership position. If you're lazy, there's not a chance that you have to be put into a leadership position. And if you are, you won't be there for very long. Number five, a worker is someone who has good follow-through. A worker is someone who has good follow-through. Proverbs 12:27 says, "The lazy man does not roast his game, but the diligent man prizes his possessions." So you just imagine someone who goes out and hunts. They get their game, they bring it home, but they're just too lazy to cook it and put it on the table. That's what the lazy person does. But the worker is someone that does what they say they're going to do. Like when they say, like, hey, I'm going to be there on time, they're going to be there on time. When they say, hey, I'm going to finish the project, they finish the project. But a lazy person, over time, people know that person's not going to come through. That person is not going to finish the job. That person is not going to show up. A worker is someone that has good follow-through. Now, the next two, they kind of go hand in hand, but a worker is someone who has their desires satisfied. They have their desires satisfied. In Proverbs 13:4, it says, "The sluggard craves and gets nothing, but the desires of the diligent are fully satisfied." And so when someone who is lazy has all these desires, their desires are never met. Their cravings are never satisfied because they're not going to go out. They're not going to go attain them. They're not going to go work to earn them. And that's very different than the worker. The worker has these desires, and they're going to put in the effort and the sweat labor to make it happen. And then number seven, good judgment. A worker, someone who has good judgment. Proverbs 12:11 says, "He who works his land will have abundant food, but he who chases fantasies lacks judgment." And so it's one thing to kind of live in a land of fantasy, you know, live in the land of ideas. It's another thing to make those things come to fruition, to make your dreams actually a reality. Someone who's lazy, they'll dream big dreams, these great big ideas, but they never do anything to actually make them happen. And so someone who is a worker is someone who has good judgment. They realize, like, I need to go out and work in order to provide myself. There might be a great idea. You don't give up on dreams, but they make good judgment on where they need to put in their work in order to earn a paycheck for themselves. The last three. Number eight, take responsibility. The worker takes responsibility. And this is something, you know, I've said a couple of times. Proverbs 26:16. Says, "The sluggard is wiser in his own eyes than seven men who answer discreetly." So in other words, a sluggard has all the answers. I mean, someone who is lazy, you know, they're wiser than seven people. They have all the reasons, they have all the answers, they have all the excuses. as to why something's not happening, because they like to play the blame game. They like to blame other people. Well, if it's this person, that's why I'm not successful. Or, you know, I'd be a lot further along in life if it wasn't for my parents. And so it's one thing after the other that a lazy person likes to cast blame and not take responsibility. A worker, at the end of the day, takes responsibility for their life. Number nine, you can identify a worker because it's someone who's not paralyzed by fear. A worker is not paralyzed by fear. Proverbs 22:13. The sluggard says, "There's a lion outside," or, "I will be murdered in the streets." You see, for a lot of people, fear immobilizes them. Fear, it paralyzes them from actually going out and pursuing their dreams. Because what if you can't attain those dreams? What if people don't like your work? What if you fail? There are all kinds of different fears as to why it keeps people from becoming lazy, becoming paralyzed, and not going after the things that they desire within their life. And then lastly, a worker in most cases has the chance at good relationships. They have the opportunity for good relationships, which is quite the opposite for the slacker. Proverbs 10:26 says, "As vinegar to the teeth and smoke to the eyes, so is a sluggard to those who send him." You see, someone who is lazy, someone who slacks, they strain relationships. You know, continually asking for money, or in the workplace, you know, people are picking up their slack. I mean, if you ever had to be in a project with someone, and a lot of times you don't want that person in with you because you know they're lazy and you know they're not going to follow through, and that everybody is weighing in on this one thing and this person has to be a contributor, and you know they're not because they're lazy. And so there's a big difference between those that work hard and those that are lazy. And that was just a quick 10. And that's something to go home and kind of digest maybe a little bit later. Because Proverbs has a lot more to say about what's going to happen to those that work hard, the opportunities that will open up for them, as well as the lazy person and what results in their life. Now, most people right away, you'd put yourself in the worker category, right? I mean, most people wouldn't say, I'm like, I got the microphone out. I said, okay, let's just kind of go down the list here. You know, what'd you say? Worker, you know, slacker, worker, slacker. I mean, most people say worker, 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 you know, and until someone would like nod, be like, no, dude, you're a slacker. Everybody knows you're a slacker, right? I mean, lazy isn't an attribute that, you know, you describe yourself with. It's like, well, you know, I think I'm intelligent, you know, charming, witty, lazy. Pretty lazy. Yeah, just kind of just lay around, just lazy. When I was thinking about it this week, it's like to go to a job interview. Can you imagine, you know, you get that one question. They're like, okay, so describe yourself in one word. Okay, lazy. I'd say lazy. As a matter of fact, probably I can guarantee you that based off of all the applicants you have, I am the laziest person. I barely applied. And I can guarantee you that I'm going to waste countless hours surfing the web and strain most of the relationships in the office, and it's gonna be hard for you because you're going to probably have to fire me in about 6 weeks, maybe. You know, it's not something that we would say like, yeah, gosh, I want to be lazy. Although oftentimes we'd like to be, right? Oftentimes we just kind of want to be indifferent to life, maybe a little bit like this guy. Check out this video.
I don't like my job, and I don't think I'm going to go anymore.
You're just not going to go?
Yeah.
Won't you get fired?
I don't know, but I really don't like it, and I'm not going to go.
So you're going to quit?
Nuh-uh, not really. I'm just going to stop going.
When did you decide all of that?
About an hour ago.
Really?
Yeah.
About an hour ago. So are you going to get another job?
I don't think I'd like another job.
Well, what are you going to do about money and bills and...
You know, I've never really liked paying bills. I don't think I'm going to do that either.
Well, so what do you want to do?
I want to take you out to dinner. And then I want to go back to my apartment and watch Kung Fu. Do you ever watch Kung Fu?
I mean, we feel that. You know, we may feel like that at times. I don't know. I don't know anybody that's actually ever, you know, has done that. But there are times that, man, we just get so tired or so overworked that we become indifferent. And we want to be lazy. We want to slack in so many different areas. But before you kind of maybe check out, or maybe you already have, and you think, well, you know what? I'm a worker. I pay my rent. You know, I bring home my paycheck. I've had a job for a long time. It still doesn't mean that we don't slack at work. Because sometimes we can kind of stereotype that slacker, you know, the 35-year-old that still lives at home in his parents' basement and plays video games, right? You know, like that's the extreme version of a slacker. But we could slack at work. I mean, we could do the bare minimum, you know, just to, you know, to collect a paycheck, to kind of go unnoticed. We can slack and spend a ton of time on the web or checking our Facebook or tweeting or texting or whatever we're doing and not really having productive time at work, even though we may have a, you know, high-profile job and at one time maybe in our life we worked really hard. Sometimes we could slack at work and not give our best. But when it comes to just life in general, there are a lot of places, in most places, we have to work. I mean, think about relationships. In order to make relationships good, you have to work at relationships. I mean, do we work hard, you know, in serving and loving our friends? Or does it always feel like we're gonna go out of our way? And so we kind of slack there, you know. We never go after and talk to our friends or call them or pursue them. They always have to pursue us. You know, what about when it comes to parenting? You know, are we a hard worker when it comes to parenting, or do we slack there? We may put all of our energy, all of our effort, like all the best of us, like everything we are, we put that into our job, and then we drive home, and we open the door, we walk through, and then we have nothing more to give our kids. We have nothing more to give our kids, and we don't consider that work. We don't consider that we need to work at that and to be able to put some in the reserves and be able to work because we got one shot at it to raise our kids. Do we work hard there? What about in our marriage? You know, when you're doing your vows, you know, it's kind of that blissful ignorance at that point, you know? It's just like, yeah, I promise I love you, I'll cherish you, it's always going to be like this, and, you know, and you usually don't remember that day anyways. But it takes a lot of work, right? It takes a lot of work. Great marriages, they just don't happen. And a lot of times we don't realize that until we start seeing the damage. And then it takes even more work to go back and to correct and to bring healing to some of those areas where there's wounds. But it takes a lot of work when it comes to our marriages. It takes work when it comes to our bodies, keeping ourselves healthy. You know, if we get lazy in our lifestyle, well, then we start eating things that we shouldn't be eating, and laziness lends to things that are quick and easy, you know, the path of least resistance. And so we eat stuff we shouldn't be eating, and we don't go out, and we don't exercise, and then we have this avoidable health issues that we have to deal with because we're not putting in the discipline and the diligence when it comes to our bodies. And also, I think the most important thing by far is that are we working when it comes to our relationship with God? Because God is faithful, and that's something that's unique in all of our different relationships, is that there's no one as faithful and loves us the way that God does. And God is always faithful, regardless of what we do or don't do. But do we slack in that relationship? Do we give him our all? I mean, he says that we're to love him with all of our heart, all of our mind, all of our soul. And so do we give God everything, or do we kind of slack? Other things take a precedence. Other things, you know, are a little bit more important than him. You know, there's some other thing, some other distraction. Now, grace is opposed to any type of earning. And see, God freely gives us his grace, but it's not opposed to effort. The gospel teaches us that we're to honor and glorify God by the way that we work. We're to give God our best. But see, our sin, it keeps us from reaching our full potential. Our sin, it helps us to try to find the corners, you know, to cut them, you know, to find the path of least resistance, to become less than focused on reaching our full potential, you know, as workers in the job, as parents, as friends, you know, as spouses, you know, with our own health, and especially in our relationship with him. You know, I think, you know, there's a stealthy way that Satan kind of gets in and distracts us, because distractions are one of the key ways of how it just distracts us enough that we can't give something our full attention. So at work, we get distracted by something else, so we can't be fully productive. Or we're at home at the dinner table, you know, and the phone is buzzing and emails are coming in and we get distracted. And so we don't give, you know, the people that we say we love the most our full attention. Or when it comes to God, we let other things, other priorities get in the way. And so we're not working hard in obedience to him. There's some interesting statistics that I found that just show just how distracted our generation is. AC Nielsen did a poll and found that the average American watches 4 hours of TV a day. 4 hours of TV, that's 28 hours in a week. That's 2 months of nonstop TV in a year. And over a 65-year lifespan, you know, that's 9 solid years. And for our younger generation, between 8 and 18, they watch on average or involved in some type of social media or media entertainment 7 hours and 38 minutes every single day. That's 53 hours within a week. I mean, I just have to think that there are other things that have a higher priority than that. There's nothing wrong with entertainment, but entertainment, that's kind of a lazy outlet. You know, a lot of times that we've had a hard week, or the kids, man, they're just driving us crazy or whatever it may be. And so let's go flip on the tube and let's just try to escape. Let's try to not think about our responsibilities. Let's just try to, just for that moment, have some peace of just not being able just to think. There's nothing wrong with entertainment. But when we overindulge like that, I think Satan kind of gets the best of us. You know, our work boundaries are becoming blurred. Because we are so distracted at work, you know, we start taking work home. It's like we're always on. It's always happening. Instead of being really productive in blocks of time that we set aside for work and being able to spend our energies and work in other places that need our work in other parts of our life. You see, these are things that can easily distract us and cause us to be lazy and cause us to slack in areas that we can't afford to slack. Now, the gospel, as Christ followers, the gospel gives us Sabbath rhythms, right? That there is an appointed time to rest. There is an appointed time just to relax and let things go. And those times of rest, they just punctuate our lives of work. So it can affect kind of the way we work and what we do. Because, you know, as we look at the Proverbs, it's common sense. You don't have to be a Christ follower to look at that and say, yeah, if you're lazy, then poverty is going to come on you. But if you work hard, opportunities will appear before you. You'll create opportunities. But the difference between someone who doesn't follow Christ and someone who does is that in our work, we have an opportunity to honor and glorify God in how we work. And we need to be reminded when we come into seasons and moments where we kind of want to put on the cruise control, to be reminded that the way we work, it's a reflection of God. That the way we work is an opportunity to give him our best and to worship him. Colossians 3:23 says, this is a great verse just to memorize. And it just says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart as working for the Lord, not for men. Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. Not what, you know, only in some things, you know, work at it kind of when you feel like it. But no, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. Not working for yourself, not for any selfish motivations, because we could be hard workers, and this is a whole other discussion. You could be hard workers, but you could be working for the wrong reasons. And there's nothing wrong with making money. There's nothing wrong with providing for your family and wanting the good things in life. But if there's not the motivation there as a Christ follower to honor God in the way that you work, you might be working too hard. You might be working for the wrong reasons. And so in everything that we do, we have an opportunity because of our association with Christ to honor him and to glorify him. And that's the antidote. That's the antidote when you don't like your job. That's the antidote when you have a boss that you don't like, that you don't like being around, or coworkers. That's the antidote when you're in a marriage and you're working really hard and you want to make the best of it, but you're not getting anything back from your spouse, is that other people's response, it's not dependent on them because we're not serving other people. It's not about other people. It's about God first, that we give God our all. And sometimes the way that we work is the best demonstration of the gospel. Matthew 5:16 says, in the same way, let your light shine before men, that they may see your good deeds and praise your Father in heaven. We still need to declare the gospel with our mouth. But the amount of time that we spend with people and working, sometimes the way we work is the best demonstration of the gospel. So let's just kind of wrap this whole thing up. Proverbs, it just gives us this practical wisdom about how we should work. Either we're going to choose to live a life as a slacker, live a life as a sluggard, someone who's lazy, and the result of that will be poverty and many other things, a devastating lifestyle. Or we can live a life as a worker, someone who is diligent and takes responsibility. As Christ followers, our motivation is to work at whatever we're doing with all of our heart so that God will be glorified in that. So when it comes to, just a couple of questions for you to ponder this week. So when it comes to those areas in your life of where you work hard, is your primary reason that you work hard, is it to bring honor and glory to God? And in those areas that maybe you're slacking, what changes need to be made so that you can glorify God in that area? Thankfully, we have a God who's a God of grace, a God that loves us, and he's faithful, that we ask him, God, search my life. What areas of my life that I'm not honoring you with? He's faithful to reveal those to us. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, God, I just thank you that, I thank you for your faithfulness. I thank you, God, that you have already done the work for us in salvation. And there's nothing that we could do to earn that. And that, God, you live for us, you died for us. And that you deserve all of us, every bit of us, especially when it comes to the way that we work. That, God, that we would work at whatever we're doing with all of our heart to honor and glorify you. God, I pray that you would search our hearts, that you would reveal the areas of our life that we're not honoring you. And that, God, that we would make the proper changes, that we would put in our full effort, and that, God, you'd give us the strength of your Spirit to transform our hearts in those areas so that we can work diligently for you, and that other people, Lord, that they would see you at work in us and that they would come to faith because of it. God, we thank you for this morning. In Jesus' name, amen.